This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3582 for Tuesday, the 26th of April, 2022. Today's show is entitled, Rolling a New Character. It is part of the series Haskell. It is hosted by Tuku Tuoroto and is about 30 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is Tuoroto continues writing an example Haskell game, this time rolling a new character.
Hello, I'm Tuula Turto and you're listening to the Hacker Public Radio. This time we'll continue writing our small game in Haskell and we are going to create a random character. So, before we go, let's have a quick peek at some places in the code. So, we have the main.hs file that contains the main module definition that was generated automatically by the stack when we started this project. And in the end of that main function, there's the call to the run function, which is defined in the run.hs file. And that's the place where we can see the overflow of our program in glance. That's the, if you want to think, that is our main, like, main thing that our program does. I copied the source code into the show notes if you want to have a look. But basically, there's a, first, we are using the show main menu to ask the user if they want to. It will display the main menu and ask user if they want to start a new game or quit. And depending on their choice, there's a case analysis, case choice off. And if there's an exit game, then we just return from the run function and then the whole program will end. Or we go to the branch where we create a new character and select the equipment and start playing, and in the end display the game over screen. So the another interesting module is the types. There you can find how player items, monsters and such are defined. I'm not copying it in the show notes, but if you want to have a look at it, it's at the Codeberg repository. There's a link in the show notes to there. And be mindful that you look at the 0100 tag, because there's a newer code than what I'm talking about now, and that's a slightly different. There's been some reorganization done, and there's some extra things there that I may get into the future, but not this time. So our run function basically has a, it has a bunch of log statements to tell what the program is currently doing. Those are using the Rio. They come from that. And then there's lines like player, left arrow, lift IO, ever run IO, roll new character. This is what rolls our new character. And then there's that eval run IO. That's a clue to us that we are dealing with the random number generators. So it takes the global random number generator and supplies that to the roll new character function. Because in the Haskell, I will get into the random numbers bit more detail later, but in the Haskell, state is usually immutable. So if you call a function and give it to a random number generator, you are always going to get the same result, unless you give it a different random number generator. So that evalrand.io takes the global random number generator and threads it through the calls inside of the roll new character. And the lift IO thingy is that we are in a Rio monad now. The signature of the run function is Rio app parentheses. That means that it doesn't return a value. It has a app as a configuration and it uses Rio monad. So that allows us to access that configuration. We are not using it in this program, but it's there if we wanted to use it. And it allows us to do debugging by outputting our log statements that we are using. And it allows us to print on the screen, but if we are using our things that are using I/O directly, we have to use lift I/O. It's a bit. I'm not probably the best. That's not probably the clearest explanation, but it's enough for us. So if you see lift I/O, it means that we are using things that are designed for the I/O monad inside of RYO monad. Anyway, what our function do? So there's the choice left arrow, so main menu, that shows the main menu, and whatever value it returns is placed into choice. Then there's a case choice of, that's a case analysis. There's a two branches, start new game or exit game. And there's the player left arrow, lift IO, LRAND IO, roll new character. That rolls our new character. And those are dollar sign there. Only that's there to instruct Haskell to evaluate that LRAND IO, roll new character first. And whatever that returns, supply that as a parameter to the lift I/O. If we didn't have that there, Haskell will read this line that call lift I/O function and supply it two parameters, evalrand I/O and roll new character. And that of course doesn't work. You could replace that dollar sign with the parentheses around evalrand I/O roll new character. The end result would be the same. It's just a different way of writing it. Display new character, player, that just displays our freshly created character. Gear, left arrow, select starting gear, player gear, player. That creates that uses our equipment that possibly get generated in the rolling a new character. We are actually not using that. And it displays a menu where the player can choose the equipment. And the result of that is placed into gear variable. Game, left arrow, lift IO, evalrand IO, start game, player gear. This starts a new game. It shuffles the deck and prepares things for the game to start. And the result of that is placed into the game variable. This variable now contains type. That or value that represents our game. It has the deck and the current card and the player gear and all that stuff. Finished game, left arrow, play game, game. So this plays the game until we are done and the end result is placed into the finished game. And display game over finished game displays the game over screen. So, word about input and output. One of the things that I really like about the Haskell is that you have ability, I mean, you're forced basically, to state which functions have access to the input and output, printing on the screen, doing network calls, accessing databases, accessing files on a disk, and which functions are pure in a sense that they are always just data in, data out. And it's guaranteed that when you call a function, that you will always get the, with the same parameters, you are always going to get the same result. So 1 plus 1 is always 2. It doesn't magically turn into 3. 1 plus 1 also doesn't print on the screen. It doesn't access the hard drive or anything. It just takes those two values and produces a new value. And that makes, for example, testing really pleasant, because the more you have those pure functions, the easier it is to test, because you can just write examples or do property-based testing or whatever you like. And it's always like data in, data out. You can even go through the code by hand and figure out that if I give these values, the results will be this, and then write your test like that. As soon as you start mixing in I/O, things get really tricky, because if you have done any, for example, unit testing or integration testing, any automated testing, you know that as soon as there's a database involved or files involved, the testing is a little bit trickier. And the same thing is it is with the reasoning about the code. It's easy when you can just look at the code and you know that it's values in, values out. Nothing is going to change somewhere outside of the function. Okay, showing the main menu. That show main menu function has a signature Rio app main menu choice. So it doesn't take any parameters. It uses the Rio. It has the app as a configuration, and it returns main menu choice. And it has a lot of those lift IO statements. They are just to make sure. They just make that the put strln that has been designed to work with the IO, that it works inside of this Rio monad. So we are just using the put strln to print out nice menu with two choices, and then we are calling main menu input function. And that one has a signature of Rio app main menu choice, the same signature. And this uses the getline to read a line from the user. So user can type zero or more characters and hit the enter. And that whatever they typed is placed into the I left arrow lift IO get line. So we get one line and place it very descriptively named variable I. That is terrible name, but apparently I choose to use terrible name there. And then we are doing the case analysis. Case I of 1, return start new game. 2, return exit game. So if the user enter 1, we return the start new game, and 2, we return to exit game. And then there's the underscore right arrow. That means that whatever user inputted and didn't match anything previously, we handle in this branch. And there we first do the log debug. We tell that somebody made an incorrect menu choice and show what they typed there. This ends into the log. It goes into the STDR stream. Usually that is directed to on the screen, but when user starts the game, they can use the, let's see if I can remember. I think it was 2 greater than and then file name. That directs the STD error stream into the file, so they can direct it into the log.txt, for example. We instruct the user, please select 1 or 2, and then we call main menu input again, the same function we were. So we keep looping, recursing inside this function until user enters 1 or 2. And now you might be thinking that what about stack? Doesn't that mean that if user enters incorrect choice plenty of times, then there will be a stack overflow and the game will crash? That's not the case with the Haskell. I'm not actually quite completely familiar with the technical implementation, but Haskell doesn't have a stack in the same sense than in other programming languages. And also, the compiler is pretty good at optimizing code. And here, the main menu input is the last call of the function. So whatever the main menu input returns is what this function will return. So the Haskell understands that, the compiler understands that there's no work to be done with the returned value inside of this function, so we can just return the value directly. We don't have to keep track how many what value have been returned from the function and do some extra work. So it's the last call of the function, so we can just return the value directly. We don't have to calculate the value inside of that function, return here and then return from here. We can just return directly from the code function to the whatever place called this function. So, rolling a new character. There's this, in our run function, there's this player left arrow, lift IO, eval run IO, roll new character. that rolls a new character. And because there's that evalrand.io, we know that this deals with the random numbers. If you look at the signature of the roll new character, it is random gen g, tick arrow, rand g player. Okay, this tick arrow means that on the left side there's some constraints. So g is some type that has a type instance of the random gen. Random gen is a type class that defines our interface basically. There's a set of functions that has to be defined for that type. And this function returns rand g player. So whatever g is, we don't care as long as it's, it has an instance of the random gen. It could be the one that is in the Haskell libraries, or it could be one that you have written if you have some really nifty implementation for the random number generation. So we are returning a player, and we are returning behind the scenes inside this rand monad, we are returning the new state of our random number generator. Because remember I said that when you call a function with the same result, same parameters, you are always going to get the same result, unless there's an IO involved, because then of course you cannot guarantee that the database has the exactly same data, or it actually even exists there or something. But even with random number generators, with random numbers, that is true. Same input, same output, even if you have random numbers. And this might sound a bit contradictory, but it works in the way that when you want to generate random numbers, you can do it either in the IO monad, and then the results depend on the state of the universe basically, or you can do it in a pure function where you have to supply your random number generator, and that random number generator has a state. So given the same random number generator state, you are going to get the same result. And when you ask a random number from that generator, you are going to get a random number, and you are going to get a new state for that random number generator. If you ask the same random number generator new random number, you are going to get the same number back, and it's the same state. But if you then ask a new random number using that new state that you get after the first call, you're going to get a different random number. So if you were to do this by hand, and you needed, let's say, 10 random numbers, you would have to make 10 calls, take those values, keep hold of those values that are returned, and make sure that every subsequent call is using the latest random number generator state that you got from the previous call. It is possible to do this, but doing this by hand is really tedious and really error prone, because you are going to end up with the random number generator 1, random number generator 2, and so on. So that's why we are using the rand monad here, which make sure that when you are making those calls, it will thread that random number generator state behind the scenes, making sure that every call is going to use the latest generator state. So you don't have to do it by hand. You can just say that, give me 10 random numbers, and it will give those to you, and the state of the generator will be moving behind the scenes without you having to worry about it. And when you are returning, like here, we are returning the rand g player, we are returning the generated player, and behind the scenes we are also returning that latest state of the random number generator. So if somebody were to use this function in a part of a bigger random computation, they could just call this, and they would get back the random player, and behind the scenes they would have that random number generator threading through the future calls. This is pretty nifty thing. So, implementation of this role new character isn't too complex. So we are doing that str left dice 3 dex left arrow dice 3 mind left arrow dice 3 max HP left arrow dice 4. So we are throwing 3 or 4 six-sided dice and summing them together and putting those values in the str dex mind and max HP. So, and then we are returning a player where we are setting those values. So the player strength will be the str and player dexterity will be the dex and player mind will be the mind and the player HP will be the max HP and the player max HP will be the max HP. So we have a separate values for the HP, that is the current hit points that represents the player's vitality or life force, and then we have the max HP that represents what's the maximum of that value. Because during the adventure the HP might go down or go up, but it will never have it is never allowed to go to the over the max HP. And that dice is of course written by us. That has a signature random gen G, tick arrow natural, arrow rand G natural. So it takes it deals with the random numbers. So it has that rand G monad. It takes one parameter that is natural, and it returns a natural. Natural is a type for number, natural numbers, so it can be 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. It cannot be negative. And Haskell cannot, well, you, I think you can write code that it could check that in the run, in the compile time, but I don't, I'm not good enough to do such a things. But it will check in the runtime when you create a new natural number that it is zero or more. If you try to create a natural number of minus one, you are going to get a runtime exception. So this has the advantage that in here, where we are using the natural number, we can be sure that it is zero or greater. We don't have to worry about or do any checks that what about if it's a negative. It cannot be. We don't have to worry about that. But on the other hand, when we are doing our calculations with natural numbers, we have to be sure that we think that what is the possible results of this. If you are doing the multiplication or adding up, then no problems. But as soon as we are starting to do subtraction, we have to be careful that we don't subtract bigger number from the smaller number, because that will get us into the negative territory, and that will cause a runtime exception. So we, when working with the naturals, we always have to check before doing subtraction that we are not going to subtract too much. And if we are going to subtract too much, then we have to think about in the terms of the our program logic, should we throw an exception, or should we return zero, or should we return a something else. Like we have to think what it means in our program's terms that we are trying to subtract too much. But anyway, here we are not going to do we are not doing subtractions. We are going to generate random numbers, and that we are going to do with this line roles left arrow get random rs 1 6. Okay, so this gives us random numbers between 1 and 6, inclusive. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And it will give us an infinite list of random numbers. Like it is really infinite. But because the way Haskell is written and how Haskell operates, that list is, when we evaluate it, it's always evaluated only as much as we need. So if we take the first number, then we are going to get the first number, and then we have a something called tank. In other languages, it's similar to promise. It's not quite the same, but it's close enough. So if we take the first element of that list, then we get the first element, and then the rest of the list is there, but it hasn't been computed. If we take the second element, then the second element is computed, but not the rest. So it's an infinite list of random numbers that is evaluated as when we need. So don't try to count how many numbers there are, because that will cause problems. So, and then we do the let roll equals sum take from integral n rolls. So roles is our infinite list of random numbers. Take is a function that takes two parameters. It takes the integer and the list, and it takes as many elements from the list as that parameter tells you. And because it uses integer and not the natural, we have to use the from integral function to convert our natural into the integer. So take from integral n roles takes n elements from that roles list. So we take n dice rolls, random dice rolls, and then sums them up. And then we return. Now that roll is integer, so we have to again use that from integral to convert it from the integer into the natural. So this little thingy, these three lines, is going to roll dice n amount of times, sum them together, and return the summed result, and of course the state of the random number generator, but it's going on the behind the scenes. We don't have to worry about that at all. Okay, and I could have used here a integer as the value of the n, then we wouldn't have to do those two from integral calls, but I wanted to use the natural because it tells to the caller pretty plainly that you have to supply zero or greater number when you are calling this function. You cannot put minus one here or 1.5, because those don't make sense. You cannot take minus one elements from the list. You cannot throw minus five dice. At least in this game, you cannot do that. Okay, no. So now we have a basic layout for our program, and we have a randomly generated character. I wanted to deal with the gearing up the character too at this episode, but it's already half an hour. I don't know if I ramble too much or where does the time go, but anyway, next time we are going to have a look how to gear up the character. There's a little bit more user interaction required. Here we only had the user chooses one or two to either start a new game or quit the game. But in the next episode, there will be a little bit more interactivity. It will be still in the text console, because text console is a lot easier to work with than some, say, graphical user interface. And it is, we want to write our game in the as little complications as possible. I'm sure that the game that we are writing here could be written in a much more clean, a much more elegant, or much more abstracted way, but that would require somewhat more effort from our end. And now the goal is just to write a game and get it done, and maybe worry about making the code pretty and elegant in the later when it's done. But first we want to get it done. And like I said, the game is available at the Codeberg repository. There's a link in the show notes, and please look at the 0100 tag, because Intel, there's a newer code in the repository. I did some restructuring and some extra things there that hopefully we will get into the later. If you have any questions, comments or feedback, you can reach me by email or you can reach me at the Fediverse, where I'm tuturto at the tech.lgtp. Or you, even better, you could write your own, record your own episode and post it in the Hacker Public Radio. Ad Astra.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.